One case that I'm thinking about is there was a lady who died in a trailer. She was murdered, and the trailer was set on fire. And I tested the son, and it did horrible in a test. I tested the father, and he still passed the test, but he failed the test, but he didn't do as bad as the son did.
Warning. The podcast you're about to listen to may contain graphic descriptions of violent assaults, murder, and adult language. Listener discretion is advised.
The Police Polygraph with Detective Eddie Pearson, Part 2 of 2.
So you have to take each person independently and adjust as you go, because not everybody's body language or statement analysis is the same. Sure. And not everybody will respond on a polygraph the same. Now, having said that, let me kind of clear this up. A polygraph exam not only detects deception, it also detects the concealment of information. And there's a little bit of difference between the two. Let's say, for instance, you were accused of robbing a bank, and I were giving you a polygraph test. I may ask you, did you steal any of the money? Were you present when the money was stolen? Were you in possession of any money after it was stolen? If I ask you all those questions and you say no, which you would, because if you say yes, you wouldn't be taking a test. So you may say no to all those questions and be telling me 100% of the truth. But what you left out was that you were the getaway driver. So everything that I ask you, you told me 100% of the truth, but you can still fail the test because you concealed your participation in the bank robbery. That's the problem with polygraph. Because a lot of times people will say, well, I told 100% of the truth and I still failed that test. That proves that polygraph test doesn't work. No, what it proves is that you probably didn't tell me something about your participation in this bank robbery. And I may not have known to ask you the question about you driving the car, because that information wasn't given to me before I gave you the test. So the main focus I try to look at is I want to make sure that I'm asking everybody good qualifying questions. And I want to get as much information as I can from the detective so I can do the best polygraph exam I can do to get as much information as I can get. So a lot of times when detectives don't know this, what I'll do is I'll just ask like a participation. Did you participate in any way? And this is what participation means. You planned it, you did it, you helped cover it up, conceal it, or failed to report it after you knew it was done. And that usually covers that. But if I don't know to ask that question, I can't ask it.
That explains a lot.
So,
sure. That explains a lot.
So yeah. A lot of people that, you know, you read on the internet and says, well, I was 100% honest and I failed that test. Well, there's a reason you failed it. And it's probably because there's more information you didn't provide because maybe someone didn't know to ask you the question.
There we go. So, that's logical. Because I remember we had one that they didn't see anything on the polygraph, and it was a shooting and a murder. And then the kid that did it ended up testifying and that he shot the person. And I'm going back in my mind now. I'm like, probably what it was, because he had a co-defendant.
Right.
Is it was probably something like that. And now looking back, that would be logical. Is that he probably just skated by on the nuances of semantics, maybe, or something.
And it could have been the way the question was asked.
True.
Because when I ask my questions, I try to be as detailed as I possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
So if a person was stabbed and was murdered, that's the question I want to ask. Did you stab that person? Not did you kill that person? Because killing the person could, you know. Well, no, I stabbed them, but I didn't kill them. They died at the hospital due to an infection, so that ain't on me.
Yeah.
People try to justify it that way.
Oh, I have no doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt.
So I try to talk to the detectives. I'm like, what do you want to know? Well, I want to know if he stabbed him in the chest. Good, I'll ask that question. Did you stab that person in the chest? And that's a yes or no question versus did you kill that person?
Gotcha.
That's kind of vague. So I try to be as specific as I possibly can.
So back to it again, just because I hear these kind of things, you know, straight rumors out. Are there any diagnosed mental health conditions that people could be labeled with that would be challenging? Like a common thing I hear a lot is if they're antisocial or sociopathic or psychopathic or maybe a narcissistic personality disorder, are they more of a challenge? Do they have or anything? Is there any science that says that's true?
No. Basically, what happens is I ask everybody the same series of questions. You know, do you know the difference between right and wrong? They say yes. Who taught you that? My grandmother.
Okay.
How did she teach you? Well, when I did something wrong, I got my butt spanked. Okay. So now you know the difference between right and wrong. Yeah, when I did something wrong, I got punished. You can take a polygraph.
Ah.
Right. Oh, because yeah. You know the difference between right and wrong.
There we go.
Where it comes into is, you know, when people have mental conditions, they're not medically suitable to take a polygraph.
Right.
There's some other medical condition that an examiner doesn't believe that they're suitable to take a polygraph. Of course, you don't give them a polygraph.
Yeah.
But in my experience, if you ask somebody a series of questions and they can explain to you the difference between right and wrong, especially when I did something wrong, what would happen to me? I got punished. So you know when you do something wrong, you get punished. Well, yeah, it happened to me as a kid.
Hmm.
They know the difference between right and wrong.
Ah,
so as long as you can establish that, you can test them.
Hmm.
Oh, wow.
Cool beans. Straightening a lot of BS up that I've heard for a long time,
yeah.
Too. Speaking of another place that this comes into, there's a lot of misconceptions and stuff like that, is because you talked about on a TV show, the mock court kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. When can polygraphs come into a courtroom and when can't they? If you can just give some general guidelines, maybe.
A lot of people say polygraphs are not admissible in court.
Right.
Okay. Well, that's true in most cases. I've testified in court a number of times on polygraph. Some of the judges say, I want to know what you said in the pretest interview. That's before I give them the test. I want to know what was said in the post-test interview. If they fail the exam, then I give them a post-test interview so they can explain what caused those physiological reactions that caused them to fail the test.
Sure.
So some judges only want to hear the pretest and the post-test. They don't want to know anything about polygraph, what questions were asked, anything. Other judges, when I've been into court, they want to know everything. They want to know the questions you ask, why you asked that question. They want to know what the charts look like. They want to know everything. So in most cases, polygraphs are not admissible in court, but it's kind of up to the judge. New Mexico is the only state, as of right now, that I'm aware of. New Mexico is the only state that actually has laws on the books when it pertains to polygraph as far as the court appearance goes. I've been told a couple of weeks ago that Indiana is trying to start some laws. Put it on their books. But as of right now, New Mexico is the only one that actually has established laws when it comes to polygraph in courts.
Interesting. Yeah.
Wow.
So it may not always be like a part of a proof case or anything, but it definitely is going to come in, I guess, as far as the whole how we got somebody maybe to confess or something. Is that what you're saying?
Could,
there
yeah,
we go.
Yeah,
exactly.
Based on their statements. Yeah,
gotcha. Could,
yeah.
Cool stuff. Okay, back to exams, because you've thrown a couple words out before. Criminally involved, I think, was one of them or something like that.
Sure.
As a polygraph examiner, what kind of exams do you do in any given year?
Okay.
What can we ask to do?
For our specific department, we do pre-employment exams, and we test the police department, fire department. At one point, we tested corrections officers. We test E911 operators, dispatchers, and we test anybody that's a civilian that works in police headquarters.
Gotcha.
We also do them for other agencies that request them. We also do criminal-specific tests. Right? If a detective is working a case and he thinks a polygraph would assist in the case, we can do a criminal-specific test. And I also do ICAC testing. ICAC is Internet Crimes Against Children.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, what happens is if a detective does a search warrant and they find child porn on a computer, I can do an ICAC test to determine if the suspect is a hands-on offender. And we're doing that looking for unreported victims. Right, so those are the general tests that we do. And okay. We'll do probably 375 pre-employments a year and probably 30 to 40 criminal tests a year.
Gotcha.
So,
but just in those circumstances, so somebody at a department store can't come and say, would you test these seven people for me that I think took a mink coat? Or
yes and no.
Yeah.
Right. There's a thing out there called the EPPA, Employee Polygraph Protection Act.
Mm-hmm.
It was signed by President Reagan in 1988. And what it does, it protects private companies or employees that work for private companies. So if a detective is working a case, we can do a polygraph exam on the employees if they agree to do it based on the investigation. But we cannot do it based on the employer requesting they do it. that applies to all private businesses except for government agencies and armored car companies and pharmaceutical companies. But everybody else falls under the EPPA Act. Gotcha. So if an employer came to you and you work for, say, a retail store, and he says, I think you've done something, I want you to go take a polygraph test, they can't do that because that's a violation of that of the EPPA. But if a detective is working that case, we can do it in reference to his investigation.
Gotcha. But they can't make you take it. But it's
all polygraph tests are volunteer.
Exactly. That's a good thing to put in there, too. But it's not like it's not the same thing as the retailer holding your job over your head, is what I'm getting at.
This idea
would be solicited by the detective to do that. Fascinating.
And if we do give that test under the EPPA Act, we can only release the polygraph results to the detective. The employer is not allowed to have those results because they can't use the results to discipline the employee in any way.
Yeah.
So we only release our test results in those particular cases to the detective.
That sounds fair. Sounds fair, for sure. Well, let's go into it. What about you, Wendy? Because I don't want to jump ahead on topics because in case you've got something that is picking your brain. But
well, I guess think mostly what I was wondering you were talking about, and I'm not necessarily referring to the employee polygraph, but do you get with the detective that's working a particular criminal case to judge what questions, or because you've done this so long, do you already have kind of your series of questions that you like to ask?
Basically, what I do is I don't have a set of questions. Like, I don't have rape questions, burglary questions. I don't have those set questions. What happens is the detective will call me and say, hey, I'm working a case. This is the synopsis of the case. Do you think you can do a polygraph? Absolutely. So he'll send me his case file, and I'll read everything in his case file. And then we'll bring in the individual that's been accused or whatever they've been accused, and I base my questions on what the detective wants to know and what I discovered during the interview. So if it's, say, a burglary, right? Each burglary, I can't use the same exact questions on every single burglary because each burglary may be different. Mm-hmm. So I have to adjust the questions on what I think the best questions are to ask on this specific case.
So you kind of tailor each question for each particular interview.
Exactly. Yeah, correct.
Huh? It's not unlike we interviewed Greg Davis and talked about medical and forensic pathology and the importance of having an investigator there at the autopsy or close to it, because that dictates the same thing with a forensic pathologist as to what they're going to look at and not look at. Neat stuff. I'll guarantee you people are out there shaking their heads right now, because I am for sure. And I was a little closer to the game. This is almost embarrassing. So I knew how to send people to the box, but I just didn't understand how it worked.
You didn't know what happened once they got in there.
I was on his side waiting for the big one. You know, come on, Brad, pull it home. Call me and say that they fell on their knees and assumed the fetal position. And
well, what I do is, and not everybody does this, but what I do is if the detective wants a polygraph, I make them come and watch me do the polygraph.
Oh, I can't imagine not.
Because usually something comes out in a pretest interview that they didn't know about.
Yes.
So there's always, not always, but usually more information. And I don't know what that information is that's important to them because it's not my case. So there may be something that's very trivial to me. You know, the guy may have owned two cars and he told the detective he owned one, for instance. Well, that second car may have been the car that the crime was committed in, and nobody knew about it because he didn't tell anybody about it.
100%.
So then it comes out in the polygraph about the vehicles that he owns, and the detective's, well, I never knew he owned two vehicles. Well, that gives him another road to go down to continue their investigation.
100%.
So I always have the detectives come and watch it because you never know what they may say that gives them additional information.
Yeah, always watch.
Now, is the detective in there with you, or you all take some breaks and you kind of...
No, we record everything. Every one of our polygraphs are both record audio and video. So when I'm given a polygraph test, it's just me and the examinee in the room. And then the detective or whoever's watching the polygraph usually watches it from my office.
Okay.
And we record everything. And then once we're done, we give it to the detective and he books it into evidence or whatever they do with it. But they watch the whole thing from a.
So if he comes up with another question, do you all maybe kind of pause and take a break so he can say, I need for you to ask about this when you go back?
Yeah, what I do is once I've done my pretest interview, and that can be anywhere from, I don't know, 45 minutes to 2.5 hours. Just depends on how much we talk about. We generally take a break. I'm getting older, so I need a little break every now and then. Mm-hmm. So and then I'll go in and I'll let the examinee take a break, go to the bathroom, get a drink of water. If they want to go outside and smoke a cigarette, whatever they need to do. And then while they're doing that, taking their break, I'll go talk to the detective. I say, is there anything else you want me to ask about? Anything we need to follow up on? Is there something that you didn't know about that you want me to dig into? And so we always talk to the detective to find out if there's anything else we need to talk about. I develop the questions while the examinee is on the break. He comes back in, the examinee. I go over all the questions and I go over all the answers before I even give him the test, because I don't want the questions to surprise him. Mm-hmm. So we go over everything. Everything's 100% transparent. The detective knows the questions. The examinee knows the questions. We talk about everything. For instance, if I'm going to ask a participation question, I'll say, this is what I mean by participation. You plan it, you do it, help cover up concealment, fail to report it. That way they can't come back and it's happened. I've learned from experience. I wasn't really too sure what you meant by participation.
Oh, sure.
And so a lot of times I'll ask them, what's participation mean to you? What's the word voluntarily mean to you? Mm-hmm. And I'll have them explain it to me. Because that way I am sure that they know exactly what we're talking about. And there's no thoughts about maybe he understands it, maybe he doesn't.
Right.
Because if I start thinking that, then I stop and say, what does this word mean to you?
There we go.
Just to make sure we're all on the same sheet of music.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Too cool.
A lot of times in rape cases, I'll have them to explain to me what consent is. What's consent? Oh. What's consent to you? What does the word consent mean to you? Oh, this is what it means. And then, okay.
Yeah, because, just thinking off the top of my head, what that means from being in the interview room with people who have been accused of that too.
Right.
There's a wide degree of spectrum of what people think consent is.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll just ask them,
what's consent mean to you? What's what it means? And so if I'm satisfied with their explanation, we're good.
Oh, one of the things you deal with in sexual assaults is, well, they didn't say no.
Yeah, exactly.
Aside from the point that they were passed out on Xanax, with liquor at Wild Turkey. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not making light of that, but that's what you deal with is that a lot powerful stuff, powerful. Well, you kind of danced around this a little bit too. Let's take it into it. And just to kind of firm it up a little bit, what a polygraph is not. Because we've talked a lot about what we do, and you've kind of hit a couple of things that it doesn't do. But what are some of the misconceptions on that or what it is and it's not?
A lot of people call a polygraph a lie detector.
Right.
A polygraph is not a lie detector.
Good.
There's no instrument that I'm aware of that will detect a lie.
Right.
What a polygraph does, it monitors and measures those physiological reactions when you answer a question. Okay. So a lot of times, people refer to it as, I'm going to go take a lie detector. Well,
sure.
We all know what that means.
Right.
But it's not a lie detector. That's basically what it is not.
Gotcha. So. Good deal. And we've talked about court and stuff like that. So mm-hmm. We're there. Let's go back to this a little bit, because I've seen and heard things over the years too. When people are coming to take a polygraph, is there a little niche crowd out there that believes they've got the answers on how to deceive you as a polygraph and how to beat the machine? And I say that because I remember over the years, you remember this because we were on patrol about the same time, mm-hmm. is that with the intoxilizer, mm-hmm. that Zima wouldn't activate it.
Yeah.
Or if you put a silver dime on your tongue before you blew in the X, it would negate it.
Yeah.
And people have that. Do you see that same kind of line of BS at polygraphs when people come and try?
Yes, I do. Yeah. There's a lot of people. And one of the questions I talk about is, during the pretest interview, I'm like, let's talk about the research that you've done on a polygraph. You ever looked it up on the internet, read a book, seen a TV show?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I know this, I know that, I know this, I know that. Oh, okay, well, let me explain to you how that works. And they'll come up with, I've seen on the internet, put a penny under your tongue or put a tack in your shoe or, they come up with all these crazy things. Well, one of the advantages I have that when I'm not actually giving polygraph tests, I do the same research everybody else does. And the advantage I have is I have 4 interns that I'm currently teaching. So I'll take the interns in the polygraph room and I'll try those countermeasures to see if they can pick them up. And then I'll have them try to see if I can pick them up.
Mm-hmm.
So we do a lot of research on countermeasures. And we're kind of trained to monitor those kind of things.
That's what I thought.
Most people who come in, they don't try to beat the polygraph. What they do is they'll try to use countermeasures to enhance their physiological reactions to help themselves. They think it helps them. Mm-hmm. Well, the problem is it actually hurts them. Because if we think that they're using countermeasures, we'll stop the test and disqualify them. Because they can't follow simple instructions. We tell them not to do it. Mm-hmm. And we give them very specific instructions on what they need to do during the test. And so when they start a lot of things that they read on the internet or some things that maybe somebody told them to do or whatever, when we see all that, we immediately stop the test.
Gotcha. Interesting.
Because it's not fair for everybody who didn't do it.
Yeah.
So we stop the test and recommend that they're eliminated.
Have you ever had to eliminate?
It doesn't happen very often, but there are some people who come in, and I basically tell them in the polygraph, if you try to manipulate this test in any way, I'm going to recommend that you're terminated from the hiring process because mm-hmm. it's not fair to people who follow the instructions.
Oh, sure.
So as long as you tell 100% of the truth, and that's the key, telling 100% of the truth, not 95% of the truth, and you follow my instructions, you shouldn't have any problems. Most people don't have an issue.
What sure. about on the criminal aspect? Do you tell them as well?
Tell them the exact same thing because it's their test, you know. And a lot of times they'll say, well, I'm just here to help you out. Well, this has nothing to do with me. This
That's
is your,
not helping you.
No, this is your test.
Paying
you know?
A bill? What's it you know? Doing? A car
yeah.
payment?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I ask them at the very beginning, I say, why are you here? You know, why are you here to take this test? Well, I want to clear my name. Okay, let's move forward.
There we go.
All right. And so when they come in and say, well, I'm just here to help you out. Well, no, this has nothing to do with me. This is all about you. You're here voluntarily. This is your test.
Yeah.
And so, as you know, and I tell them, as long as you tell 100% of the truth, you won't have any issues. When you start telling 97% of the truth, well, that's a problem.
True.
And it's an integrity issue is what it is.
So, yeah, because usually you'll see people with it if they get a positive, a decent, good one, like if come back, no, whatever your terminology, and we can hit mm-hmm. that. They'll hold on to that like Willy Wonka's golden ticket. I mean, that's the integrity part.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
If they don't get a good one, then they've got different names for what happened. And usually they're blaming you all for screwing them or lying to them or something.
Yeah,
or
it's still, you know, that wasn't a good question. I'm like, well, you answered the question and I allowed you to come up with your own answers to the question. So mm-hmm. they'll come back and, you know, well, it's the instrument's fault or it's my fault or it's, mm-hmm. you know, it's never their fault.
Never their fault.
Yeah, it's always, and there's always another issue. There's got to be another problem. Yeah, the problem is you're not telling the truth. That's the problem.
Yeah, and the opportunities because of the pre and the post. I mean, it's not, because again, a lot of people, I think that you're thrown under a chair, you're strapped in, you know, they put the blood pressure cuff on. They ask you the amount of questions and goodbye. Yeah. And that there's so much more. Like you said, a pre might run 45 minutes to 2 hours. Right. And whatever. And so you've got tons of opportunity to come to the foot of the cross, as they say.
Yeah. I've been in criminal tests that take 5-6 hours.
Sure.
So it just, you know, it just depends on how they do and what we talk about. And
gotcha.
You know, some of them take 4 hours, some of them take 6 hours, five or six hours. So
and a disqualification, just especially in employment, that's probably, you know, that would be like not going for the drug test or, you know, anything else that you just stop on the process or don't participate, that's reasonable too. And they probably got a reason they're doing that as well. Neat stuff. That's it. And probably intelligent people are listening, putting this together. What advice would you give to anybody who is going to take a polygraph really for any reason, either pre-employment or let's say, God forbid, they're in an environment where they're suspected or people are looking at their involvement in a case, what advice would you give to somebody?
There's two things I would say. One is that tell 100% of the truth, regardless of how painful or how embarrassing it is. Do not conceal anything. And the second piece of advice I would give is follow the examiner's instructions.
Right.
Don't try to manipulate the test. Tell 100% of the truth 100% of the time. We all make mistakes. We all do embarrassing things in our lives. So talk about it. Get it out in the open. And don't try to conceal it. And just follow the examiner's instructions. Mm-hmm. Those two things. If you do that, you shouldn't have any issues.
Yeah. It's kind of like what we'd hear from our parents or our grandma. Mm-hmm. You know, just always tell the truth and whatnot. Always, fascinating stuff.
Now, have you covered, you know, I know you've done a gamut of things. You mentioned criminally.
Yeah.
I guess you've covered everything from child abuse to murder.
Pretty much, yeah. Child abuse, murder, burglary, rapes. Yeah, you know, we've done. If you can think of it, I've probably done it. So,
if you move the ball forward legitimately and ethically, which I know it would be on an investigation, how's that feel for you as Eddie when you go in and you spend all this time with this, and you learn that the investigation advanced and the right person, and maybe just as important, when we exonerate somebody,
right,
I mean,
right.
we never want to let that feeling let that go. That's an important part of this whole thing that you're still doing, and I used to do. How's that feel inside?
You know, it feels good to me because not everybody who takes a polygraph test is guilty of what they said they've been accused of.
Okay, yes.
So when someone comes back, you know, and say it's a sexual assault, and someone was accused of doing this, and we give them a test, and they passed, for lack of a better term, they passed the test with flying colors. I go to the detective and I say, listen, I don't think this is your man, right? Based on his body language, his statement analysis, his polygraph exam. And I usually have a pretty good idea about, based on what they tell me and how they tell me the incident occurred, how they're going to do on the test, because I've done probably over 3,000 polygraph tests.
Mm-hmm.
So I usually have a pretty good idea, but it's very satisfying to me when you can go to the detective and say, yes, I would concentrate on this guy.
Sure.
This is the road I would go down if it was me. Or, I don't think this is your man. I think, you know, you might want to look at someone else, or, you know, maybe go down another avenue, right? So I think it's very helpful to the detective, or I like to think it's helpful to the detective, because a lot of times they'll call me back and say, hey, you know, after we did the polygraph test, the guy said this, or the guy said that, or, you know. So we get that additional information, which is very helpful to them.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And again, you know, like you said, not everybody takes a polygraph as guilty of something.
Exactly.
The whole business is the search for the truth, or the closest we can get to the truth at any given moment.
Exactly.
And I think it's always powerful. That was always a good feeling for me, too, when we had somebody that was either we suspected or somebody suspected, or hell, came in and falsely confessed, and you could rule them out. That's a pretty damn good feeling. It's right up there with actually charging them or putting them in prison or whatever, too. So.
And sometimes that will occur in a polygraph. You know, somebody will have a reaction to a test, and then you start interviewing them. And one case that I'm thinking about is there was a lady who died in a trailer. She was murdered, and the trailer was set on fire. And I tested the son, and they did horrible in a test. I tested the father, and he still passed the test, he failed the test, but he didn't do as bad as the son did. And so we went back and we discovered that later on that they admitted that the father was protecting the son. That was the issue. And so they were both looked at as a suspect, but later on down the road, they discovered that, you know, the son is the one who actually committed the crime, but the father was trying to take the blame to protect the son. So we worked all that out in polygraph. You know?
Gotcha.
So we can use it for that. We can also use a polygraph. A lot of people don't understand this, to locate missing people.
Ah.
And the way we do that, say, for instance, there's a murder that's occurred and you're looking for the body. And you know the body's in the state of Kentucky. So we get a map of the state of Kentucky. We divide it into four parts. We ask them, is the body in Section A? Is the body in Section B? Is the body in Section C? Is the body in Section D? And we can look at those reactions and start eliminating the sections. So if they had a reaction to Section D, then we get a map of Kentucky and blow it up just for Section D. And we divide it into four parts again. And we can narrow it down. One of the things they teach the new polygraph examiners is they'll hide a set of keys or something in a building. And you start testing the person that you think that hid the keys, and you can locate the keys in whatever room they're in by narrowing it down. So a lot of times you can use a polygraph to locate items, locate bodies. We can use it for a lot of different things.
Holy
wow,
moly.
I never would have thought of that. It makes complete sense,
though.
I'm going
to just be honest, I'm floored. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a lot of stuff that I just didn't do. How about, Ed, can you think of any other, and you don't have to go into detail on names or anything like that, but can you think of any other anecdotal stories of cases you participated in that were shocking, or that the polygraph really played another strong role in?
Sexual assault and a divorce.
Okay.
People were going through a divorce. One person was accused of sexually assaulting the 12-year-old daughter. And we test the suspect and exonerate. Did not happen. Okay. Mm-hmm. Didn't happen based on body language statement analysis, polygraph test looked great. Say it didn't happen. Then they go into court and the other individual says, yeah, I made it up so I could get more child support. Or I made it up so I could get more custody or whatever. And so when you do those kind of tests and you discover that, you know, person did really well on the test, they passed the test, it feels really good for me to kind of help those people out because I can only imagine what they're going through. And so when people, when you use those polygraph exams to, and a lot of people say, you know, if you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail, so to speak.
Sure.
So we don't use it. I don't use it in that way. I use it to get as much information as I can, and maybe to either say, yes, this is the person that did this. This is who I would look at. Or most definitely, I don't think this is the person that did it based on these results, based on how they answered the questions, based on their body language. Because I've discovered that people that are honest will give you the information that you ask for, and they don't take their honesty for granted because they're expected to be believed.
Sure.
But when someone's trying to convince you they're not the kind of person that would do that, that's a problem.
Yeah.
So we start digging into that.
It's kind of cute when, you know, because I think I told you, and everybody knows that the only thing on our televisions in this house probably is true crime. But that's just true, right?
That's just always
when you talk about Paris Island, the last couple of days, I got her to kind of watch Full Metal Jacket a little bit with me, and she got tickled over that. But well, I'll watch her watching a show, and she'll comment when they're interviewing somebody, and I've said the same thing, is that they'll be in a box with somebody, and they'll say, like, they'll do a qualifier, they'll do a dissonance thing, and I'll look over and say, well, that's a liar right there. Is it because of what you just said? And it's fun that to kind of watch that and be able to pick that out to where when they're trying to present themselves as somebody they're not, they work a little too hard at it. That was my experience. Yeah.
Yeah. And I usually can pick that up on the statement analysis on how they say something. Because most people, they'll rehearse a story, but they won't rehearse how to say the story or how to present the story.
Ah.
And then they most definitely don't rehearse going backwards. Mm-hmm. You know, so people will rehearse what they want to say, but not how to say it. So a lot of times I can pick stuff up just by, you know, someone saying something like, well, I parked the car versus I parked a car. There's a difference between the two.
Oh, yes. Right. Yes.
And so a lot of times when people, you know, start mentioning these things in statement analysis, I can pick this up and then I start going back and I'm like, okay, let's talk about this car again. And I just start digging in on whatever they're talking about. Okay, So it's a lot of times on these TV shows, and my wife's really, really good at it. Actually, women, not to get off topic, but women generally are better at body language than men are. And the reason why is women have 14 to 16 emotional receptors in the brain. Men have about 6 to 8.
So, I knew you all were lacking.
So, yeah. So, sorry, guys. It's just the way we're wired.
I just wanted to talk about polygraphs and not blow her head up to and get out of the room. So, thank you.
Let the man continue.
So a lot of times women can pick up on the emotional aspect of body language quicker than men do. Mm-hmm. So my wife's very, very good at it.
Yeah.
And so it's just one of those
things. So you learned all these good techniques from your wife.
I don't know.
Go ahead, say it. She's probably going to listen.
I don't know if I'd go that far, but yeah, she's very good at
it. That's why they call me Motionless Dave in the house. I just like get real still. Yeah. That way she can't read me.
Don't look at her.
Yeah, don't make eye contact. Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
I mowed the yard.
Yeah, yeah, keep my hands in my pockets and don't fidget. Right, exactly.
Right. So,
it's amazing stuff. And again, because we share a lot about what that's like to interview somebody. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I was just thinking about the other day is when you're interviewing somebody and you're getting tired, how you have to fight the fatigue, because if you don't fight it, you'll miss what you just said. Mm-hmm. The exchange of one word and how they refer to a person or a thing will take you in a completely different direction. And that I still remember that when you were really tired, you'd been out and everything, is every time you went in there, because you never knew how long you're going to be in there, is making your stuff stay awake so you could focus, because man, you could lose so much on just one word. You could walk right past an opportunity or a window.
And you got to remember that when you're conducting the interview, you're watching their body language, but they're also watching yours.
Oh, sure.
So you really got to, when I do my interviews at the end of the day, I mean, I am mentally drained. I just go home, take a shower and take a nap. I mean,
sure.
Cause you're in that box, as you say, 2, 3, 4, 5 hours. It just, mentally, it just beats you up. And you got to really control your body language, because they're watching you just like you're watching them.
Mm-hmm.
So,
oh, for sure. Absolutely. Cool stuff. This is exceeded all the expectations.
Yeah.
Not that I didn't think we'd be, I didn't even think we'd, wouldn't enjoy it.
Right. You know, I'm sitting
here.
I'm
over the moon right now.
I'm just as blown away as I was when we interviewed the coroner, because you don't realize all these fine details.
That's it.
I mean, I knew what polygraph was.
And I think our listeners and viewers will say the same thing, because it's one of those things that just gets beat up. Well, the fact it's called a lie detector. Mm-hmm. Somebody didn't do it any favors when they did that, but just the other points on that, simply amazing.
Mm-hmm. Well, Eddie, thank you so much for coming in. We have learned so much about what you do. You know, you always, I know you said that don't refer to it as lie detector, mm-hmm. but I think he's the human lie detector man.
Might be.
I think he might be.
Yeah, be careful.
I mean, he's done it for years.
I think there was a guy on YouTube or the movies one time that called himself the human lie detector.
I think we've got him right here.
Yeah.
But anyway, Eddie, thank you so much for coming in, sharing with us your career, your past career. I had no idea about the Navy, then the Marines. And after sitting there with David watching Full Metal Jacket the other night, I don't know whether to be scared of you or just real on my best behavior. I think I'll go with best behavior.
Yeah, she's probably going back to the drill sergeant, the gunny, and the insults. That's what we were laughing at. Aside from that, thanks again for being here.
Thank you so much.
I guarantee you, and the listeners, you need to share this with your friends. You need to turn people onto this. When you hear people talking about a polygraph, give them the Murder Police podcast and the channel on YouTube and on the whatever your podcast player is, and share this, because it's one of those things. Life would be a lot easier if we just all understood this stuff a little bit better. And again, that last sage advice, just tell the truth.
Just tell the truth.
Amen. Well, thank you, Eddie.
You're welcome, Eddie.
Thank you. Thank you.
The Murder Police podcast is hosted by Wendy and David Lyons and was created to honor the lives of crime victims, so their names are never forgotten. It is produced, recorded, and edited by David Lyons. The Murder Police podcast can be found on your favorite Apple or Android podcast platform, as well as at murderpolicepodcast.com, where you will find show notes, transcripts, information about our presenters, and a link to the official Murder Police podcast merch store, where you can purchase a huge variety of Murder Police podcast swag. We are also on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, which is closed caption for those that are hearing impaired. Just search for the Murder Police Podcast and you will find us. If you have enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe for more and give us 5 stars and a written review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you download your podcasts. Make sure you set your player to automatically download new episodes so you get the new ones as soon as they drop. And please tell your friends. Lock it down, Judy.